This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dylan was a revolutionary, man. The way that Elvis freed your body, Bob freed your mind.
This is Bob Dylan, about man and God and law.
I was born to just walk the line. Living on Tulsa time. Living on Tulsa time. Set my watch back to it, living on Tulsa time.
We're still living on Tulsa time, reflecting back on the world of Bob Dylan, and a world gone wrong when Bob Dylan gets it all wrong. At the beginning of June, I had the pleasure of attending the World of Bob Dylan Conference in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was a great weekend, and Tulsa is a special place. The Bob Dylan Center, which is stunning in its own right. The Woody Guthrie Center, which shares a wall with the Bob Dylan Center, and rightly so. Woody was there first. Greenwood Rising, because the scar of the massacre of the black community in Tulsa in 1921 was there before Woody and Bob, and it needs to be remembered every day. Switchyard Festival, which hosted the World of Bob Dylan and so much else. Kane's Ballroom, which has hosted everyone from Roy Acuff to the Police and served as the home of Bob Wills' Texas Playboys, and hosted, for my money, one of the great instrumentalists, Larry Campbell, former guitarist for Bob Dylan's band. He played alongside his partner, singer, and muse, Teresa Williams. I mostly listened in Tulsa. As always, Greil Marcus killed it. Talk on Dylan and Dolly. That's Barton, not Salvador. Dylan and the late stage painters with Nina Goss, one of my favorite Dylanologists, the unexpected pleasure of how some of my own work has been useful to study Bob Dylan and the Bible at Oral Roberts University, of all places. Unexpected twists and turns of thought, conversations in the bar and in the hall. And I had the chance to speak twice in Tulsa as well. For the first, I was a guest of my friend and colleague, Rabbi Dan Kamen, at the synagogue at Congregation B'nai Umuna. Steve Jenkins, the director of the Bob Dylan Center, joined me, and I thank the center for kindly co-sponsoring the event. The second was a discussion entitled The Problematic Genius, Interpreting Bob Dylan When He Gets It All Wrong. Now, you may have heard Catherine Lofton and I talking about Dylan going electric as a cultural and religious lightning rod earlier this season. You can check it out if you want to hear an incredibly erudite thinker placing Dylan in the heart of some of the most important spiritual and cultural issues of our time. Catherine was unable to join the discussion as planned due to illness, but Music Impresario and walking encyclopedia of musical wisdom and knowledge, Mark Montgomery French was there. Presenting with Mark was, for me, the highlight of the trip. We're planning to share Mark's take on Dylan in the second part of this episode very soon. I am Dr. Stephen Daniel Arnoff, host of Bob Dylan, About Man and God and Law.
I left Oklahoma, driving in a Pontiac, just about to lose my mind.
The podcast currently in your ears, and also the author of the book About Man and God and Law, The Spiritual Wisdom of Bob Dylan, available wherever fine books are sold. And now, for those who missed it, those who fell asleep, or for those who just happened to come by just now, here's an expanded version of my talk, thoughts on what to do and how does it feel when Bob Dylan gets it all wrong. Because, well, it happens.
My watch back to it, living on Tulsa time.
Welcome to episode 12, season 3 of About Man and God and Law, the spiritual wisdom of Bob Dylan. When Bob Dylan gets it all wrong.
Pantheon podcast listeners, Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
I dreamed I saw St. Augustine alive as you or me, raging through these quarters in the utmost misery, with a blanket underneath his arms and a coat of solid gold.
The setup for these 4 stories of Bob Dylan going off the path actually leads us back to where this podcast began 3 years ago. The destination for Dylan has always been salvation. 4 paths, 4 windows, 4 doorways frame Dylan wrestling with salvation, bargaining for salvation, and somehow walking himself back from taking a lethal dose. Now here's the rub. Bob Dylan, who is one of the most nuanced religious thinkers working in the seam between traditional spirituality, personal seeking, and the spirit of creative expression in the marketplace of popular culture, Dylan has still fallen into the hole that all of us fall into, the hole that he's in, the hole of religious fundamentalism, religious literalism, a flat view of scripture, all of which are strangling not only religious imagination across cultures in our age, but also choke free passage for thinking and doing, government, human rights, coexistence, and the simple pleasures of life and loving others, because, like it or not, all of these things flow from religious sensibilities that have grown or calcified, whether we or our society is religious or not.
And I press my fingers
For the past few years, I've wanted to lean into that tension of Dylan wrestling with man and God and law to see how he comes out the other end. And even if it's clear that every person or community needs to navigate the pitfalls of wrestling with fundamentalism and the fundamentals of religion on his, her, or their own, Dylan clearly has something to teach all of us. The scenes of the potential crimes against our higher forms of religion are found in the four-point viewpoint in these songs. I dreamed I saw St. Augustine, Señor, Precious Angel, and Joker Man. But those challenges that these songs present pop up all over Dylan's canon, just as they do in the maps of our lives. First, where many martyrs fell, I dreamed I saw St. Augustine. As I've mentioned here before, the original Greek meaning of the word martyr describes a person who witnesses or testifies to an event or idea.
I dreamed I saw St. Augustine alive as you or me, tearing through these quarters in the utmost misery.
Christianity and in beliefs paralleled elsewhere, martyrdom comes to mean sacrificing one's life as an act of testimony for one's faith. When it comes to martyrdom and testimony, as deep as Bob Dylan's narrator in I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine enters the salvational drama, he holds a sad complaint. Cannot be a martyr. Augustine taunts the dreamer, tearing through these quarters in the utmost misery. These quarters, all four of them in fact, are the dreamer's heart. Dressed in gold, a religious icon animated in real time, Augustine strikes at the gifted kings and queens who, despite all good intentions, cannot attain the ultimate gift of salvation, not even with a figure of religious greatness in their midst. The dreamer's soul has already been sold, and he is condemned to isolation and inaction. When it comes to martyrs who haunt his musical dreams, Dylan has a lot to say, a lot to feel, and based on the topic, returning as often as it does, a lot to live up to.
I dreamed I saw St. Augustine alive with fiery
figures, including Medgar Evers, Hattie Carroll, Emmett Till, Davy Moore, Nettie Moore, and Reuben Hurricane Carter, who was in prison but did not die in jail, all enter Bob Dylan's repertoire. The melody for I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine is a knockoff of the melody and structure of the song I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill Last Night. And as any folk singer dropout like Bob Dylan knows, Joe Hill was a white figure of martyrdom for the labor movement. Of course, Dylan spends a tremendous amount of creative and spiritual energy probing the meaning and the myth and the mysteries of the martyrdom of Jesus. When it comes to Dylan's message about the American cross of martyrdom hoisted high during the Civil War, images of lynching populating my own recollections from the Greenwood Rising Memorial in Tulsa, where America's homebred hate machine of white supremacy saw lynching as not only a badge of honor, but as a kind of indescribably satanic entertainment. A particular figure of martyrdom stands out in the realm of Dylan's canon. That's the namesake of the song Blind Willie McTell. This is the tale of that all-encompassing template of slavery wrapped up in Like a Rolling Stone's ever-present demand for a American witness to explain to his audience how does it feel. Here, a white singer, Dylan, plumbs the interminable gap between being a secondhand witness to slavery as opposed to being a martyr because of this original sin. The singer is framed in front of the same window he gazed through crying in I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine in the song Blind Willie McTell. He's an observer, watching and feeling mythical history unfold. Even if he is removed from it, he witnesses everything. Time breaks itself down. But as we recall that the original meaning of martyrdom is to witness an idea or value through the sacrifice of one's own life, the best Dylan can offer is a respectful imitation of those who suffer all around him. Even with all of the love he affirms for the people and culture resulting from America's formative myth, formative scar, formative cross, Dylan's song of slavery is still just love and theft. He can go back, but he can't go back all the way. He admires faith, but he can't be saved or sacrifice or testify. His salvation is limited. And here's another rub. Is wanting the kind of faith, the kind of salvation, the kind of salvation that made Augustine a model for how absolute surety of a singular religious path to save a tender soul could be weaponized against anyone who did not perceive the grace? Well, the martyr is a vessel of complete vulnerability, literally giving it all up for the ghost of faith. There's a beauty in this release and trust, but all too often, the supposed selflessness of the martyr is another side of religious narcissism. It can go bad quickly. Is there any narcissism more troubling than that of white supremacy? And isn't it religion combined with a bottomless pit of ignorance that creates the pawns in the game that puts one kind of human being above another, providing a sense of supremacy by killing and hoisting up the other on a tree? I've made many friends in the world of evangelical Christianity over the years, people of faith and good works who don't compromise their beliefs with sexism, racism, and politics of hatred and fear. But in the map of the world, fundamentalism like this, which I see down the street perpetrated by Jews against Arabs, Muslims against Christians, and other against other of all kinds, it is almost impossible to see what good religion is doing in the world. Faith seems to default to closing the wound of feeling broken by blaming and hating someone else for one's troubles. The so-called true believers are often put on the defensive against anyone or anything that might reveal what the closing of that wound has covered up. We see this phenomena in the maddening windmill chasing of extremist believers hunting and haunting a woman's right to choose, or LGBT and trans rights. They say they're doing God's work. I say they're broken people leaning into a false edifice of scripture and faith to provide fake assurances about right and wrong in order to cover up their own fear of the unknown.
Bowed my head and prayed.
and many people die because of it. Lives are ruined. Martyrs, not by their own testimony, but because so-called believers need someone to hate in order to prove their own failed theology. To hurt and maim and degrade innocent people by the luxury of a space to feel right in the eyes of God. The road to faith is rich in metaphor and meaning. But when it becomes a dead end, mercy becomes judgment. Trump becomes president. Bibi makes himself a king. Orban, Putin, Modi, and on and on. When Dylan idealizes fundamentals of believers like Augustine, it's hard not to hang your head and cry, but not, I'm afraid, for the same reason the singer in I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine hangs his head and cries. As American blues and jazz was blooming, and F. Scott Fitzgerald was writing books that Mr. Jones would later read, Franz Kafka was stirring up a literary cauldron of faith and doubt on the other side of the world in Prague.
Can you tell me where we're headed? Lincoln County Road or Armageddon? Seems like I've been down this road.
Sensing the impending doom of ongoing war and strife, critiquing work and faith, ritualizing longing, languishing in mysticism and myth, and giving voice to spiritual wisdom from modernity that can be heard all over Dylan's work as well. But particularly in the period of his most visceral encounter with faith in the form of evangelical Christianity, a decade after he wrote, I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine. The man who is dreaming of St. Augustine and the weepy butt of a joke in Kafka's story Before the Law has a name that means everything, but it is not a proper name in either case. The man from the country perhaps is a play on the Hebrew phrase Am Haaretz, which means not just one from the country, but one without knowledge, someone who is ignorant. Kafka's man from the country appears at a gate behind which lives the law. A gatekeeper jives with him a bit, but for the most part, this is the story in which nothing, truly nothing happens. There's nothing happening here, and you know just what it is. A quiet question here, a meek protest there. The man from the country cannot will himself to push past the guard and crack open the gate. He waits, he ages, he despairs, he mourns, and he dies there, unenlightened and unfulfilled. And after all that, when his diminishment is all but complete, the guard scoffs that the gate of mysteries before the law has always been meant just for him. And then he closes it because the man from the country had never chosen to open it for himself.
There's a wicked wind still blowing on that upper deck. There's an
Kafka's man from the country gets both a kick in the pants and a pat on the back in Dylan's Señor, Tales of Yankee Power. It's a striking parallel, this song, to Before the Law from 1978. Dylan is on the cusp of his evangelical leap of faith. Señor is the Spanish term for Jesus, the Savior, the Lord, who Dylan is addressing directly. Jesus the guard before the law, who Dylan asks for advice through the song, but also rebel Jesus, wise and iconoclastic Jesus, the one who takes no quarter and no gold coin when it comes to corruption of the law. Dylan asks him, from Lincoln County Road to Armageddon, is that all there is, Señor? There are at least three choices before the singer. Resignation to his fate, Señor looking on, alienation, walking away from those tables and that possible savior, or, on the third hand, revolution, Even though he knows the option to blow it all up is his for the taking, he asks Señor for permission to go all the way. He wants not just a fellow traveler, not just a contra, but an authority to bless his resolution of revolution. Let's overturn these tables, disconnect these cables. This place don't make sense to me no more. Can you tell me what we're waiting for, Señor? This question to Señor, or rather, this request is unanswered. What would Señor do? What would Dylan do? What would Jesus do? The questions sound like the beginning of an answer, turning over the tables, overturning them, cutting the cables, starting over, lawless. Biographically, at least, a very different, likely but unlikely revolution follows. Dylan holds out the question of questions, that of living outside the law and being honest, but he can't take the leap of faith one would take to actually embrace the rebel Jesus, the activist, the Black Lives Matter Jesus, the Reverend William Barber Jesus, who won't accept a temple or a world where the poor, the disabled, are excluded from the bounties of this world or the next. Dylan almost takes two steps forward to the cusp of these things in Señor, but then, the same year, he takes one big leap back. It's in the direction of Augustine, back in time, not toward MLK or Reverend Barber. He goes back to what one might call the fundamentalist approach, and one that, at least for me, is a leap in the wrong direction.
Señor, Señor, let's overturn these tables, disconnect.
Song number 3, Precious Angel.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
I don't get it. Why would Dylan go for Jesus at a time like this? That's what Leonard Cohen was said to have asked Jennifer Warnes when he heard that the Jewish-born Dylan had entered into evangelical Christianity in 1978.
Precious angel, under the sun, how was I to know? The foundation I was standing upon. Now this spiritual warfare, flesh and blood breaking down. You either got faith or you got unbelief, and there ain't
it's no one of the great conundrums of rock and roll, how Bob Dylan, the agitating, rule-busting, iconoclastic, fire-breathing prophet, became the agitating, rule-busting, iconoclastic, fire-breathing prophet. Well, maybe it's not such a mystery. That a musician steeped in the music and mythology of the church, longing witness to a pawned America died on a cross, himself taunted as Judas, would be drawn to try on fundamentalist Christian law in all of its power and glory. This is really no surprise at all.
Shine your light on me. You know, I just
In what was for many the most confounding period of Dylan's career in the late 1970s, Dylan became, to the shock of many of his fans, a born-again Christian. To add what seemed like insult to injury for the rock and roll empire, the album Slow Train Coming, 1979, 1980's Saved and Shot of Love in 1981, were steeped in Christian imagery and proselytizing intent, anchored by a series of tours which channeled the clear-eyed focus of a missionary, aiming to capture as many souls for the good guys as he possibly could. Most of the time, Dylan embodies a multi-layered approach to any subject, especially the law, with wordplay, rich sets of allusions, insinuations, irony, and clusters of unexplained questions softening the corners of sharp extremes. With a few exceptions, the so-called Christian period of Dylan's work, while layered, profound, and rich lyrically and musically, is more literal, humorless, and blunt than any of his songwriting before or since. While the songs and performances in this phase are something of an archipelago in the land of Dylan, we would be hard-pressed to find a precise beginning and end for the influence of Christian theology, belief, or longing on his work. It's in there because it's in American music so integral.
Precious angel, you believe me when I say what God has given to us, no man can take it away. We are covered in blood, girl. You know both our forefathers were slaves. Let us hope they found mercy in their bones.
But this is the period, three, maybe four, or five albums, depending on how you count, where Dylan's Christian passion is particularly ferocious. The law is everywhere, and there is only one that's real, as he sings in Precious Angel. You either got faith or you got unbelief. There ain't no neutral ground. In fact, the opposite is true. It is on the neutral, non-fundamentalist ground that the fundamental work of spiritual wisdom is cultivated best today. And that is the fourth window to peek through. Of resignation that comes after the drama of conversion and fundamentalism, the window of moderation of passion, tempered by the wisdom of humility. In 1983, 5 years after Señor and 15 after I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine, here came the album Infidels.
Standing on the water, casting your bread while the eyes of the idol with the iron hair
Infidels, of course, are outlaws by another name, and as we've spoken about a number of times on this podcast, Infidels, the album, is about Dylan trying to put his arms around self-doubt. Comes Joker Man, a curriculum for the legal fragments which an outlaw or heretic assembles to remake a code of honor out of the fundamentals that he has almost let go of. The book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy, the law of the jungle and the sea, are your only teachers. We've spent a lot of time on Joker Man recently. Joker Man, Dylan addressing himself in the third person, as if he himself is a stranger in light of the great texts and the greatness of nature that are his only teachers. He's a visitor to his own life. What a joke. He's learned the ancient laws, and he still winds up here, laughing at himself, or maybe being laughed at. This is the painful dichotomy, which brings us to the crossroads for Dylan and the law once again. He's learned society's rules and called them out as a young man. He's tried to run wild and free as well. He's tried out many masters, his voice of frustration and irony taking us back to a voice that predates Dylan's by a generation. This reflection of Kafka, this reflection of unabiding doubt, and carrying the same conflicts as well. To be a self that feels chosen for something unique and profound, but unable to open the gate or to finish the book so that that fate can be fully seen. The dark side of this lack of choice is being restricted from walking into the light of the law. But the bright side of not taking a side with religion, as evidenced by Joker Man, is that one does not have to take this dilemma so seriously. Maybe life is but a joke.
Standing on the water, casting your bread, while the eyes of the idol with the iron head, I go in. Distant ships sailing into the mist, you were born with a snake in both of your fists while a hurricane was blowing.
Or maybe this statement of a joke has a sharper edge to it. Something that's cynical, whether it's humor, self-depreciation, or irony. There is, flowing through all of the choices of Joker Man, a function of humility, the ability to see both or all of one's faces, to accept that nothing should be held at face value as complete or as perfect, not the divine and not the human, which is formed from it in its image.
Shack and someone shedding off a wide molar skin, keeping one step ahead of the persecutor within. Joker Man danced to the nightingale tune, bird fly high by the light of the moon. Oh, 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 Joker Man.
In a world gone wrong, Bob Dylan has never claimed to have all the answers about religion or anything else. If I wasn't Bob Dylan, he once said, I think that Bob Dylan had a lot of answers too. It's in admitting what he doesn't know, a hard-earned point of view, that Dylan gets it right. Not that I'm one to say when anyone gets it right or wrong in the utterances of the heart, but to raise up absolute certainty about moral, religious rights and wrongs, to not call out religious hypocrisy for what it is, to claim that those who haven't found what you have found as being lost, These are the holes and pitfalls of religion that can sink all of us. And when he knows that he can't be all right all the time as a seeker of spiritual wisdom, that's when Bob Dylan and we get to be all right.
Wave above for the wind. I saw younger than
this has been episode 12 of season 3 of About Man and God in Law, The Spiritual Wisdom of Bob Dylan, When Bob Dylan Gets It All Wrong, Part 1. Next time we'll be talking to music impresario Mark Montgomery French about what else Dylan gets all wrong, a point of view about Bob Dylan, about race, about rock and roll that you will not want to miss. Two more episodes to go before we hang up the gloves over here, and we are proud still to be part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Check out all of the Pantheon podcasts for music lovers at pantheonpodcasts.com. Visit www.mangodlaw.com for more information on upcoming events, the book, and more. I am your host, Dr. Stephen Daniel Arnoff. Thank you for coming, and see you soon.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.